hey, you know what? We have Paul for this episode. Just wait. The VGRT Gaming Podcast, episode 463, recorded on April 5th, 2017. Welcome to the 463rd edition of the TD Gaming Podcast and the 296th episode of Video Game Roundtable. I am Jonah Falcon.
I am TJ Denzer.
I am Scott Dirk.
VGRT Gaming Podcast focuses on game news from around the industry. You see, that was an April Fool's joke because Paul isn't really on the show. So, you know, there's a lot of April Fool's stuff. This fest. Yeah, who's there?
It's me! I double fool you! I showed up!
Wow, it's Paul S. Mario. It's me, Paul.
I am Paul S. Novak, making a once again special appearance on the TD Gaming Podcast.
Right.
Oh, and you're game round two, I suppose.
Welcome back, Paul.
You can settle down, Paul. They already left. They stopped as soon as they heard you weren't going to be here.
Oh.
Yeah, that's why we have one listener right now, and it's me.
They're lost now, isn't it?
Yeah. So, you know, Scott was really into the April Fool's jokes this past week, and I'm not including it as part of the show. But, you know what? Why don't you guys talk about your favorite April Fool's joke that you saw in the video game realm, by the way, not in general. So, Scott, what was your favorite April Fool's joke this week, this past
week? The one I liked was from Mojang, and Jeb was making this like controller for Minecraft where you would play it handheld, but like in a virtual VR world. It was very crazy, little video that he has on their website. That was fine.
How about you, TJ?
I liked the Fire Emblem one. Nintendo announced a retro-style Nintendo Fire Emblem game. And put the kibosh on that later, which I'm sure drove a lot of people crazy who demand sort of the retro style on that.
You know, Homestar Runner made a joke about how ThinkGeek loves to make these April Fool's products, but if enough people want it, it won't be an April Fool's product. They'll make it.
Now, that's an idea.
How about you, Paul?
I've got to be completely honest. I have not come across any April Fool's jokes, only because I have been buried so deep in my cave grading papers that none of them actually found their way into my hidey hole.
Yeah, and I deliberately avoided April Fool's. It's as a Strong Bad says, it's a day where the internet likes to make jokes with the internet.
Oh, I forgot. There was another good one. CD Projekt Red. They announced a Geralt action figure for The Witcher 3, and it's just Geralt in a bath. That scene, that screenshot that everybody loves.
I've been saying it for years. Not fewer booth babes, more booth boys.
You know, I played an April Fool's joke on myself. I pre-ordered the $200 RC Nomad from PDP, and it arrived, and I have an RC Nomad. I don't know what I'm going to do with it. Maybe take it out to Central Park. I'm not sure. All I know is at least it's limited, and a lot of people are looking for it, so if I get tired of it, I'll just, you know, eBay it. But for now, It's actually kind of high quality. I mean, the lights turn on and off, and there's all these buttons and whistles. Oh, and I have a steel case for a Mass Effect Andromeda, except for the fact that I bought it digitally, so I don't have a disc to put in the steel case.
Well, I'm sure another disc would work just as well.
Yeah.
Yeah, I know, but it has all this wonderful Mass Effect Andromeda graphics, so I'm just going to wait until it's like $5, then buy the disc, just to put it in there.
You want to be a cheap bastard about it.
Well, I already have the game. I'm not going to buy the game twice.
At full price.
A real fan would.
I mean, I bought I bought the Steam version of Alpha Protocol when it was $2, even though I had bought it twice before.
Paul, if you've heard the last two episodes of this podcast, you would know that Jonah is not a real fan of that game.
Well, we can discuss it later. I mean, I'm not as venting about it as I was, but I figured out what the real problem with Massive Andromeda was. But before we do that, Paul, I know you've had your nose stuck in a bunch of grading papers, but have you played any games lately?
Oh my god, I am utterly obsessed with Breath of the Wild. All of you can go screw yourselves. And,
which version? The Switch? The Switch or the Wii U version?
Switch.
The Switch version. Okay. No, because there is a Wii U version.
Say with great indignation, how dare you?
Well, it was initially being developed for the Wii U. It was initially announced for the Wii U.
It would have saved the Wii U. This game's freaking amazing.
Okay. So let me ask you a question. What kind of emergent gameplay have you found yet? You know, stuff that isn't scripted and just made you go, whoa.
One of my personal favorite things is the freedom in exploring Hyrule, the emergent gameplay being essentially how does one take their own system of notes for things that they want to go explore in Hyrule. Because, I mean, trying to keep track of all these rumors, like, you need an adventurer's log, like, so you could take pen and paper notes.
You know what? I'm going to tell you something. Someone blew a lot of people's minds when they showed that the entire map of Hyrule is just A Link to the Past tilted 45 degrees. They actually showed it was just a little bit tilted. Which is interesting. Yeah, I mean, it is Hyrule. I mean, you know, Britannia in all the Ultima games didn't change, really. So, you know, but how big does it feel to you?
The size of your avatar in relation to just how much space there is in the world is staggering.
Yeah.
It just goes on forever.
Have you gone from one side to the other, or just you just explore?
I've actually, let's see, I'm down to only one tower left to reveal the entire map of Hyrule.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
And that's over in the Gerudo Desert, which historically comes late in the game.
Did you buy any other games for the Switch?
I bought Just Dance, which I played for about 45 minutes and fell on my ass twice.
What?
My friends had really slippery hardwood floors, and it was very hot. And then the next thing you know, crack balls landed on his ass, and everyone's scared. Because they didn't realize that he had brought a video game console to share and was dancing in the living room. And I've also bought, as of yesterday, I bought 1-2 Switch, and I've yet to crack it open. And I now am regretting not pre-ordering the amiibos that I wanted. And dude, at one point, 8-bit Link was like in my hand in Best Buy, and I was going to buy it just because it looked neat, not because it did anything in any game that I cared about. And I was like, oh, amiibos, they're just for Smash Brothers. What do I care about that? And now it's like paid freaking $35 for it, and I'm waiting for it to come in on eBay.
How much does it normally cost? Like $12 or?
$12.
Yeah.
You can use the amiibos in other games, especially Breath of the Wild. You can scan them in and get treasures.
Well, yes, that was kind of the point that I tried to make and didn't really do successfully, was that I originally didn't realize it would have done anything cool in Breath of the Wild. So I was like, yeah, why do I want this? I don't play Smash Brothers.
Hey, wait, you know, if you got 8-bit Link, they should allow you to play as 8-bit Link in Breath of the Wild.
Would look so ugly.
Yeah. I know, just a Minecraft character wandering around the gorgeous landscape.
Everybody else has to pretend.
This has been in development for like 10 years.
The best part would be that everybody reacting to Link would just have to pretend everything's okay and this is normal.
Okay, so being the hypersexualized deviant that I am, whenever possible, I have Link running around Hyrule in his quote-unquote modesty layer.
Okay, you mean just his underwear.
That naked, essentially. And I actually had one woman be like, no, no, please don't.
How many dungeons have you explored yet?
I mean, a classy way to do a rape joke, but at least people are responding to my outfit choice.
How many dungeons have you explored yet?
Yeah. I have thus far managed to solve the Zora's problems with their mythical beast and nobody else's.
Yeah. And dungeons are a little different in this one because you have like they're the mythical beasts, which are like old school Zelda dungeons. And then there are the shrines, which are like mini dungeons that are just one puzzle. And then you collect the loot and get out. And yeah, there are like hundreds of those.
I do like that a lot because from a design perspective, it's like you have one concept that that this dungeon is trying to teach you, whether it's like, a combat test or, how to manipulate the rolling boulders to land in the target or whatever. Like it's trying to teach you something. And you kind of have a feeling that the more of these shrines you see and the more of these little lessons you learn, maybe the easier time you'll have of reaching Ganon because you'll have seen elements of these puzzles before.
Right. And what I like about it is like there's got to be like over 100 of those things, but very few of them. Like there are the combat ones that feel similar, but the puzzle ones, surprisingly, they do a good job at like varying up what you do in each of them.
Hey, last thing on Breath of the Wild here, Paul, how does it feel to play a Zelda game in which it's not hand-holding you for the entire game?
Oh my god, I feel like I'm 8 years old again. The audience may or may not know that the original NES Zelda came out in America on my 8th birthday. So that would be the joke.
There is something else, because I know a lot of people feel that this doesn't play like a Zelda game, but to me it looks like it is playing like a Zelda game, from my perspective at least. And I was wondering what you thought.
They've taken the quintessential heart of a Zelda game and stripped away all the crap that they've been adding to that over the last 10 installments.
I could agree with that.
So, yeah. since which installment? Link to the Past or Majora's Mask or
since probably A Link to the Past.
Okay.
That was the last one that it really felt like you could go anywhere if only you could figure out the right tool to get you there.
Yeah, I would go back as far as like those very second Zelda game, because this game drives into you from the very get-go that there is no object permanence here. You're not going to keep the same equipment for the rest of the game, save for like maybe a couple things.
And also it plops you in the middle of the game and says, okay, go ahead, just do whatever you want.
You still have a tool belt of tools, though. Your magnet thing, your slow time, and there are tools that you have that don't go away. Your weapons are, breakable, but your basic tools, and that to me has been a major theme in Zelda since the beginning and has stayed even in Breath of the Wild.
As a professional designer and educator, I would like to posit that it seems that this product is the result of somebody asking, what if in order to save the kingdom, the hero had to be at one with it?
Yeah, I would go with that.
Okay, we're teetering on spoilers here. I mean, it is a new game, so I mean, the fact that you said Ganon is it, we're going to get emails saying, how could you spoil it? Ganon's in it. Well, it's a Zelda game. Ganon's in it. Shut up. it's like Donkey Kong's not in one of the original Mario games. You know, it's like he's going
to
be.
Yeah, we're also like 7 weeks late to the spoiler party. So if anybody really wanted to find, like, there's plenty of people out there who wouldn't care about spoilers at this point.
I usually have a 1 year thing on spoilers, okay, although, or sometimes things just get, actually that leads into the first news item, but we'll get to that in a moment. TJ, what have you been playing?
I've been playing Yooka-Laylee a lot.
Okay. You know,
I can talk about it now.
That's been getting a lot of mixed reviews.
I have points where I enjoy it, and I think it's charming, and I think it's really amusing the way they played with those old school things. And then I have points where I want to go track down those developers and punch them for hurting me.
Yeah, that sounds a lot like the original Banjo-Kazooie, to tell you the truth.
And you know what?
I'd like to point out that punching a developer rarely results in a better game.
Yeah, well, they shouldn't have hurt me. They shouldn't have hurt me deep in my soul. But I like it. I like the music. I like the character. It feels like a toy box come to life, and I really do enjoy like the aesthetic of it and the way that things play out for the most part. I just don't like that it brought the baggage along with it. There is a lot of old school nostalgic bad choices in there.
Yeah, that's what I keep on hearing, though. The game is too retro.
Right, and I've written articles on it before, and if there's one thing I can't stand, it's including bad design choices for the sake of keeping everything the way it was.
But you know, that sort of goes back to Zelda. Now, Zelda, they updated it. I mean, you basically have an open world game now. I mean, a 3D open world game in the style of Skyrim / Fallout, but it still managed to be Zelda, you know, and they ditched all the bad choices, as Paul said, from previous games.
The problem is that Zelda is like one of the original open worlds. That's what made it so successful.
But I'm just saying, while Yooka-Laylee wants to be beholden to Banjo-Kazooie and they want to make a remake of Banjo-Kazooie with the names changed, apparently, you know, and that's what people are saying, you know, why, you know, there's a reason why the new System Shock remake is putting in mouse look. Because doing keyboard look was awful. You don't want to play the original System Shock without when it didn't have mouse look. And when it had it patched in, the mouse look was bad. I mean, you want the modern trappings, but still keep System Shock, you know, story and characters and all that stuff.
Ooh, speaking of System Shock, tangentially, has anybody else heard about this hacking tool that is actually named after the artificial intelligence antagonist? Sure. Yeah, antagonist in the System Shock series. It's this tool called Shodan, which you could actually use to, in the real world, access someone's like smart home and start like turning their lights on and off, their temperature on and off. Like, no joke.
Yeah, well, I mean, that happens
right now. I swear, I'm not making this shit up.
I mean, there's a reason why Google called their translation system Babelfish for a while.
But yeah,
because they were fans of Hitchhiker. Yeah, that thing.
But yeah, I made a terrible mistake on this game because I told one of my publishers I would. They were looking for someone to do a collection guide on this, and
uh-oh.
If anyone has ever listened to this and knows me, they know that my favorite thing in games, quote unquote, is video game chores.
God, no! I mean, if you're gonna talk about collectathons. Banjo-Kazooie was the original collectathon.
Yeah.
Even more than Super Mario World. It was... Yeah, you're asking for trouble doing a collectathon for something that's like Yooka-Laylee.
Yeah.
Collecticon?
So for my sanity, I also picked up Persona 5,
we're going to talk about that in a little bit.
Yeah.
Persona 6, Persona non grata.
Yeah. So, Scott, what have you been playing?
I've been playing Pillars of Eternity. I've almost finished that one, and it'll feel good to finally complete that game.
So you can move on to Torment, right?
Torment or Tyranny, or I've been looking at Thimbleweed Park.
Wait a minute, you haven't finished Tyranny? You haven't done Tyranny yet?
I have not finished Tyranny, no. It's hard to want to play a bad guy. It's really hard. You know,
try to be a bad guy who wants to be a good guy.
I'm not one of those people that wants to be a Sith so bad, you know.
When I played Star Wars The Old Republic, I played an Imperial agent, but he was a light-sided Imperial agent.
Yeah. I don't know. I'll get to it.
Okay. As for me, I finished Mass Effect Andromeda. And I realized the major misstep they made with that game. And that is, if you remember, the original Mass Effect trilogy is really hard science fiction, or as hard as it can be. Mass Effect Andromeda is a fantasy. It's not science fiction. Everything is always sufficiently advanced to aliens. You know, if you know the quote by, I think it was Arthur C. Clarke. Was it Clarke? Or was it Asimov? No, I think it was Clarke, who said, you know, any science sufficiently advanced enough would seem like magic. And that's what they did with Mass Effect Andromeda. You know, instead of saying a wizard did it, a remnant did it. You know, and everything, every little beat in that game is a fantasy. You have the hidden elf village with Aya. You have the orcs and elves. You have everything except it's called by science fiction terms. The very ending is a typical ending that you'd find in a fantasy movie. And my thought was, if you're going to do this, why don't you just make a fantasy? You wanted to make Dragon Age. That's what you wanted to make. But you made a Mass Effect. This should not have been a Mass Effect game. This should have been a Dragon Age game. Because, you know, terraforming planets, even though they say, well, this takes incredible technology, a.k.a. magic, to make them better. Stop. They started from that bad, you know, an angle. You know, I wish they had asked me. I would have told them a good plot, you know. But... that said, completing the game was satisfying, and the characters are satisfying. I really didn't care about the Uncanny Valley. I never really noticed it because I don't pay attention to that. Maybe it's because I have some sort of autism that doesn't allow me to read faces or something, but I really wasn't bothered by it. It doesn't hurt that I played the rest of the game on narrative mode, so the combat was tossed out the window. I didn't have to worry about it. Now, they do have a new game plus, and I'm struck by the fact that you keep everything, including the technology that you don't know about, don't have any conception about, until the middle of the game. It's sort of like, oh, you have one of the Remnant working for you. Wait, what? I don't know what the Remnant are, but I have a Remnant working for me. Okay, that's weird. Gameplay and story desegregation there, you know, or segregation. I just, you know, and the problem with it being an open world is that I, unlike the first three Mass Effect games, getting into it, it's like, I'm not going to play it again. That's the problem with open world games. I'm not the sort of person who wants to play an open world game twice. I haven't played Fallout 4 again because I don't want to have to go through all that crap.
Was this a standalone episode, or is this gearing up for another trilogy or something?
It's standalone, but with the thing that another arc is still coming. You know, the Quarians and the Drell and the Hanar. But if this ended now, it's a perfect ending. I mean, you found your golden world, which was literally golden. Spoiler, but I don't care. See, I'm a hypocrite. I'm not really giving anything away except for the fact that your golden world is literally golden.
What color are the showers in that world?
Oh dear.
Trump's favorite. So that's not April Fool's. That's just a nasty joke. And we approve of nasty jokes here.
But that came to me and I thought it'd make a nice soundbite.
Yeah. I've actually gotten back into Fallout Shelter again. Don't ask me why. Maybe it's because since it's on Windows 10, it's actually a lot more palatable than it was on the iPad. I don't know what it is. Maybe with the iPad I feel harried. With the PC version, I don't feel as harried. I've also been playing a lot of Out of the Park Baseball 18. I'm not going to get into it too much, but I will say I found one of my players. You see, they randomly generate player names, and one of my players' name is Taylor Taylor. And I thought, Taylor Taylor, the most unimaginable parents ever. T-A-Y-L-O-R, T-A-Y-L-O-R, Taylor Taylor. If I was that kid, I would smack my parents. Or maybe they just were lazy, you know, we're going to call for Taylor. And it won't matter if it's his first name or last name. It's the same. So, anyways, we will get into news now. One news, which really isn't you know, which is basically Project Scorpio is going to be revealed tomorrow, April 6th. So I really can't talk about it much, only that it's going to be revealed finally. And it's sort of like when we said the Switch is going to be revealed the next day. We'll have to talk about it in our next podcast. Isn't that wonderful? So same situation, and I'm wondering if I should have just recorded this on Thursday.
So, I guess we'll find out if it looks cool, then it'll be okay. Then it'll suck. But if it sucks ass, then it'll be okay.
I have a feeling it's not going to suck ass because it's basically the Xbox One with better hardware. I mean, that's the best thing about the Scorpio is that you're not going to have to get an entirely new library. As a matter of fact, everything's going to upscale. And that's why they, you know, that's why you had the Windows Play Anywhere. It's that all these games are going to be working on 4K because of PC. Well, guess what? The Scorpio just happens to do 4K too. Wunderbar, you know? And I like this opening. I mean, I hope the PlayStation 5 and the Switch 2 are basically the same console, just with better hardware, so that you don't have to lose your entire library when you upgrade your console.
Mm-hmm.
What do you think, Paul?
Yes.
Very nice.
What? I agree with everyone.
How about Scott? Scott, what do you think?
I'm not really interested in the Project Scorpio or.
I'm not asking if you're interested in Project Scorpio. I'm talking about the fact that you will, that it would be nice not to have to ditch your entire library when you get a new console.
I really wish they had done this earlier, but that is good. That is a very good step. Yes, yeah. I just wish they had done it earlier, and I wish Sony would have done that earlier. But yeah, it's I guess better late than never.
And you know, I think they're starting to get the idea that people are more likely to buy your system if they know they don't have to toss out their entire library when they buy it.
I agree.
You know. Anyways, we're going to move on to the first item. Twitch and YouTube streamers slam Persona 5's video policy. And this comes to us from Kotaku. Yesterday, Atlus warned Persona 5 players that if they show gameplay footage after a certain point in the game, Atlus will go after their channels with copyright claims and strikes. While some streamers aren't surprised by this policy, they've reacted with a frustration on what they feel are measures that will negatively impact their channels. Excuse me. Atlus posted a note to streamers that on their website yesterday that implied that copyright strikes would be coming to anybody who streams Persona 5 past the in-game date of July 7th. They, in fact, quote-unquote, highly recommended you don't do this in all caps. The game also blocks the PlayStation 4's native sharing features for videos and screen caps. The reaction from streamers was vocal and very negative. Atlus has historically had a draconian approach to streaming and Let's Plays. After the release of Persona 5, Dancing All Night, I love a game that has the subtitle of Dancing All Night.
Dance all night.
It's like Lionel Richie, you know. It's like Lionel Richie. All night long, all night. Who used to stream the do's and let's plays with a friend, had his channel put out of commission for 6 months because of such a strike. When a YouTube channel has a copyright strike against it, the owner is unable to perform certain actions, like uploading a video that's over 15 minutes long. Streams and let's plays exist in a legal gray area where they're at the whims of the publishers and developers. While streamers and let's players are aware of this risk, some say they feel their work benefits developers, and it'd make no sense for publishers like Atlus to go after them. After Atlus announced their policy on streaming, many other streamers and YouTubers have declared they would have no plans to support Persona 5. Quote, I refuse to promote a brand that cannot recognize a fundamental evolution in the way video games are consumed and enjoyed, one streamer said. So here's the thing.
Do I get to go first? Because I completely disagree with that closing statement.
Okay, go ahead, Paul.
Okay. This is all about building a relationship with people who really have no legal standing to be sharing the created assets of another. So yes, there is a symbiosis to allowing reviewers and Let's Play creators to share their assets. But you know what? That's a respectful relationship, and the respect needs to happen both ways. The developer needs to respect that there are people out there who are making a living promoting their product, and the people who are promoting these products need to respect when the developer says, you can have this 80% of the game to review, but we've gone and spent the time to create something special in this 20% over here, so please don't spoil it for people.
Well, here's the thing. I would agree with that if it was pre-release, but once you release a game, that's it. It's out in the wild. And, you know, I'm pretty sure you've heard of the Streisand effect, which says the more you say, more someone you tell someone you can't do this, you can't show people this information, the more people are going to do it. And what
Twitchers and reviewers have absolutely no right to share copyrighted material, which all video games are.
But they're consenting adults.
So it's all about just, guys, respect that we're not going to prosecute you if you cover this 80%, but we are going to protect this.
But you can't prosecute someone for that. It's not prosecution, for one thing. It's also something called fair use. It is fair use.
There's a limit to fair use.
There is no limit to fair use. The limit to fair use is that, Jonah,
because the guidelines for sharing things on these platforms is that if the developer gets hinky about it and starts threatening us, we're just going to shut you down. So if you want to save yourself that trouble, which in this case takes the place of litigation, then just maintain the good nature of this relationship.
You know, there's a channel.
The developer's being extremely reasonable.
A video game, what's it called, Lawyer? He has a channel. I forget his name. But he already laid this out perfectly and said, you know what? The company has no legal standing on this whatsoever. None. And here's the thing.
Because you're sharing video that is made exclusively with the assets owned by another company.
Even if you're adding
a commentary on it, the fact that you choose to make it a video rather than an article means that you are taking 80% of what you're creating from somebody else. They're doing all the visuals, and you're just adding your opinion to it. Go type an article.
Paul, you're wrong. I mean, I'm just going to say, legally, you're wrong. But here's the thing. You know what Atlas could have done, and they didn't? They could have done what people do with movies, like The Sixth Sense, or the original one, Les Diaboliques, in which they say, listen, you know what? There's some huge spoilers here. Please don't ruin it for other people. Or if you're going to do it, at least say, spoiler, you know, and let people know. But the thing, it's out in the wild, you know. And here's the thing. I remember when this happens all the time. You have spoiler things, and I actively avoided it. I mean, the ending to Halo 3 was out there. But I avoided looking at it because I didn't want to know anything about the ending. You know, the reason why it's called a spoiler is because if you watch it, you're spoiling it for yourself. You know, but like I said, it's the Streisand effect. And what's going to happen is Atlas did this. Even more people are going to spoil it, and they're going to yell it at the tops of their lungs now. You know, I mean,
and YouTube can have a grand old time shutting everybody down.
They don't.
These platforms, you are agreeing to the terms and conditions of the people who own those platforms. That's why I don't agree with the platforms in the first
place. Paul, who says you need?
I'm not advocating that they're doing the right thing, but I'm saying you're entering into an arrangement. The least you could do is maintain the goodwill of the person who's giving you 80% of your content.
But Paul, who says you need YouTube to spoil it?
Yeah, I'm actually just sitting over here right now reading up on stats on the Persona 5 wiki, and actually there's a good amount of content here past 7-7, the date that they don't want you to go past. There's actually moves here as well, characters that I don't know about yet. I'm just saying that this stuff will go out there, and this game has – oh, by the way, this game has been out in Japan since September 15th, so it's not a new game. It's just a release in the United States and Europe now.
Oh, and the thing is the United States, and from what I understand, the United States, the Atlas American PR, they were caught in a hard place because they knew this was a huge mistake, but the Japanese companies said, do this. And, you know, the Japanese companies are very litigious. They'll litigious you at the drop of a hat. If you have a party which happens to have Pikachu, a drawn Pikachu, you know, they'll demand $6,000, please. You know,
I understand.
But you know what? I'm sorry. I was just going to say, you know what the Atlas should have done? They should have said, listen, the ending, the stuff in this game is so amazing. You're going to be so surprised at what's in it. You know, don't tell anybody. We want you to do it. You know, and what happens is, you know what happens? The fans say, stop. We want this to be a big surprise. What's it called? The fans will start sticking up for the game. You know?
Here's the problem. Capitalism and democracy are at cross purposes. So until those two things aren't tried to be forcing to exist in the same space at the same time, we're going to continue to have this argument.
Well, it's not an argument. It's just a fact of life.
Well, no, I don't mean between us. I mean our society.
Yeah. But here's the thing. Like I said, you know, why make it a confrontation? Just say, listen, this stuff is so amazing.
That was my point.
You know? What?
That was my point.
Oh, I know. I'm just saying, here's the thing. You know what Devolver Digital's policy is on this? Can we stream or play? Can we stream or what's it called? Or do a Let's Play on it? Three huge letters at YES. Yes. Because you know what these are doing? They're advertising the game. And I'll tell you something. Even if something's spoiled for me, I don't care. I want to experience it for myself.
Here's the thing, though. Advertising is a skill. It's an art. We pay people to do it. So free advertising isn't always good. Sometimes free advertising just fucks up your product.
I know Aerith is fucking dies in the Final Fantasy VII. It's not going to make me not want to play the game.
But if that was all people could talk about for the first 6 months after it was launched, it would have harmed sales.
Here's the thing, you know. But here's with Twitch, people have been spoiling TV shows. That's why a lot of people don't go on Twitch when The Walking Dead is on, because they don't want to get it spoiled by people on Twitch. You know,
people are spoiling TV shows, movies, and books, and all sorts of stuff on Facebook and all over the internet. They've been doing it for years, so I don't really understand the difference of why these other companies don't seem to care or say or do anything about it. But then this one video game company gets upset over this one video game being spoiled.
Oh, it's not just Atlas, by the way. I mean, it was Square Enix as well with their little kerfuffle last year.
See, now we're starting to ask bigger, more important questions, which, again, capitalism and democracy. The majority of the game-consuming public is being trained to expect tons and tons of content for no investment on their part. And you know what? The people who make that content, you know, like me, still need to figure out how to be able to feed themselves.
Well, here's the thing. I have a question for you then, Paul.
Make money to support our families.
I have a question for you, Paul. Which is worse, everybody talking about your game or nobody talking about your game?
It, like I said, it's a tricky situation.
I mean, here's the thing. Here's the thing. If these YouTubers and streamers say, okay, you know what? Screw you. We're not going to talk about Persona 5 at all. As a matter of fact, I remember my friend James Edstrom, who's a paparazzi photographer. One actress pissed them off so much that when she was on the red carpet, all the photographers put their cameras down. And
you know
they
what?
Sent a message.
You
they sent
what?
A message.
I would prefer to be in that situation because then at least I can pay an advertising professional who knows what they're doing to control the conversation around my game.
But here's the thing. They don't listen to those people. They're going to listen to Total Biscuit and Jim Sterling. They're not going to listen to some – they're not going to listen to the Atlas.
Those aren't even words. Now you're just saying things.
Here's the thing. Atlas – but that's just – Atlas PR were the ones who had to put out this press release. That's the problem right there. Those are the people that they paid for their advertising, okay? And if a game gets bad reception – that can kill a series because what happens is if Atlas continues this way with Persona 5, what do you think Persona 6 is going to do? People will say, we don't care.
Oh, that probably won't happen because everybody loves Persona 5.
In Japan.
Well,
but here, no, they can shut down a series here. It's been done before.
Here's what's going to happen because this is where technology is. Atlas can go ahead and let me take a screenshot of their game in the game so I can share it with my friends like I usually would because we're all talking about this and we're going to share it and we're going to talk and joke and have fun. Or they can turn off their PS4 share and turn off streaming and I'll pull out my phone and take a shitty picture on my phone of the TV and then I'll post it to social media anyways. And I don't give a fuck if it's far into the game. If I have a joke to make or if I have something I want to say, I'm going to do it and I'll take a shitty picture on my phone. That's not very good quality, and anyone that sees that can think, well, that doesn't look very good, and that's whatever. I don't care. I'm just there to make a joke and have fun.
Sort of reminds me of the ending.
That's what's going to happen because that's where we are with technology right now. Just because you shut – because you tell people they can't do something, if the means are there, it's still going to happen.
Again, the Streisand effect.
My point as well is that, you know, you have book series that have gotten spoiled and movies and TV shows. People will do it because they can and they have the ability to do so.
And Schadenfreude.
And I remember, you know, Basic Instinct, the gay groups were all in front of the movie theater shouting out the spoiler. It was Catherine Trammell who did it. Even though that's technically wrong, it's sort of like maybe. But I'm just saying, you know, they're going to spoil that shit for you if you piss them off. They don't care.
And here's the other thing is that I don't have anything to lose. I'm not on YouTube. I'm not on Twitch. If they cut me off from DLC, whatever, I still have the fucking game. And the fact
you don't own the game if it's digital. They say, no, you don't. You're renting this game, even though you paid $60 for it.
But the fact of the matter is, they can go ahead and let me make the game look good with the tools that I have if I'd have PS4 Share ready, or I can make it look crappy with my cell phone.
Wow. You know, this is getting way too long, so I'll tell you what. Everybody out there, just let us know what you think. Because this is a heavy subject, and I'm glad Paul's here, because you know he supplies the counterpoint here, you know, and it is a tricky subject. What did you say?
Someone's got to be the bad guy. Send me your hate.
I don't think you're gonna get hate. I think we're gonna get a discussion here. Hopefully, we'll have a discussion.
I miss the days when I used to get death threats.
That was from me, and that was not from fans. That was from me, Paul.
Oh, sure. Ruin it for me now, Jonah.
Anyways, we're going to move on to the next item. Go ahead, Scott.
Okay, Total War Warhammer 2 announced with a new trailer. This is from Rock, Paper, Shotgun. With their business in the old world concluded, the Creative Assembly have announced Total War Warhammer 2 during EGX Resd. The strategy sequel is off to visit the Lizardmen, High Elves, Dark Elves, and other factions being kept secret for now. Interestingly, it'll introduce the risk of enemies beating you not just into the ground, but to the final goal, too. An official FAQ explains, as the twin-tailed comet of Soltek made its recent journey across the skies, it caused the vortex to become dangerously unstable. Each of the four races has its own objective regarding this. Some wish to heal the Great Vortex and prevent calamity. Others see opportunity in disrupting it. That said, no two races have precisely the same objectives, and they'll need to accomplish them in their own way. The campaign is therefore a race for the control of the vortex, culminating in a cataclysmic series of endgame events. This is the first TW game where AI can beat you to the end game objective. And yes, as promised, Total Warhammer 2 will be able to combine with the first game. A campaign map combining the lands of Warhammer and Warhammer 2 will arrive weeks, not months, after the launch for players who own both games, though they will still have the option to play on the original single region campaign maps. Total Warhammer 2 is due sometime later this year. A third game will follow.
Doesn't that make it a standalone expansion, not an actual sequel?
I was going to say that this feels very fast for being called a sequel, because you have to remember that Total War Warhammer only came out on May 24th. May 24th, in the middle of the year, no less. So we are not that far removed from the original, and I appreciate how ambitious it sounds to
I have a theory about this. Remember all the crap they had about the DLC last year?
Oh, yeah.
Remember, I think this may be a way for them to release DLC without it being DLC.
Well, no, but they've released DLC. They just released the...
I know, the additional DLC.
Wood Elves. Yeah. But they just released the Wood Elves less than 2 months ago.
I'm willing to bet you that those DLC sales are not good, so they say, you know what, we better just put it all in one package called Total Warhammer 2 and... It's actually DLC, but it's the reverse of the Mona Lisa thing. It's like now you're taking pieces of a game and putting them together and making a new game out of it.
That would be interesting if it was true.
I still don't like Total War Warhammer. I don't know what it is. I think it's because it's a lot more complicated than it should be. Yeah.
Yeah, but that's a lot of the Total War games. They've always been...
I think that's the point of them, yeah.
In this case, it's a little more arcane than usual. So, I don't know.
And people like that.
Yeah. But, yeah, some people like blood sausage, too. I mean...
some people pineapple on their pizza.
I actually legitimately enjoy pineapple on my pizza.
I was about to ask Paul. Do you like pineapple on your pizza? I'll tell you, I don't mind pineapple on the pizza. I don't ask for it, but if it's a Hawaiian pizza, I'll say, oh, whatever, and I'll have it.
Oh, my God. You guys are the bad guys.
I tolerate it.
I'm Ninja Turtle when it comes to my pizza. I remember back in the day when the local pizza joint, when Turtles was popular, literally had the Ninja Turtle special, which was jelly bean pizza.
Wow.
It was amazeballs.
I remember this guy, this really fat guy who brought in to eat pizza and donuts, you know? So, I don't know. There are guides, which I haven't checked out, that tell you really how to play Total War Warhammer and win. You know, it sort of like gives you – the thing about it is that I think there's a certain barrier, that once you're past the barrier, it all clicks and say, oh, okay, that's what I'm supposed to be doing.
I mean, I think the gauge of how this is going to go will be, does this feel like on its own, does it feel like a full game's worth of content? Because they're going to charge the full price for it.
Does that mean $40? Because a game like Total War, it's like $40, $50 because it's basically a PC game and mostly digital.
Mm-hmm.
Although I did get that huge collector's edition with the goblet and the whetstone necklace and the ring and all that stuff. So it was worth it.
I mean, I guarantee you that if they charge the original is $60. If they charge $60 for Total Warhammer 2 and it doesn't feel like a $60 game, people will be bullshit.
Okay. Anyways, we're going to move on to the next item. Go ahead, TJ.
Valve only wants to sell you good games from Engadget. As Steam continues to grow its expansive catalog, Valve is still figuring out how to separate the quality titles and undiscovered indie hits from the legions of mediocre games that are only designed to make a quick buck.
They're called asset flip games, in which they're cheaply made games and they take assets from other games and just slap together and boom, you have a really crappy third-person shooter.
They're called 95% of Steam Greenlight.
Yeah. It's actually quite literal. I mean, they showed that 85% of all the games on Steam were released in the past 3 years. 85%.
Old, yeah.
The platform is already replacing its community-focused Greenlight program with the new Steam Direct service to help Valve clean up the sea of what it calls, quote, fake games. But it still doesn't solve the problem of surfacing the really good stuff. To combat the problem, Valve is proposing a new system of Steam explorers who will play their way through queues of undiscovered games and flag their favorites to give them a bump in the rankings.
I'll have a thought on that right after you're finished.
We'll have a bunch of untrained nerds sitting around.
It isn't that. They already did that. They already did that system. It failed. That's the problem. They did have curation by fans, you know.
Go on.
The proposed system was described to two YouTubers, Total Biscuit and Jim Sterling, and vocal critics of Steam during an in-person meeting at Valve headquarters, which Kotaku has helpfully summarized here. But the meat of it is essentially a two-tiered revamp of the Curators program that will happen around the same time as the launch of Steam Direct. As Ars Technica reports, curators will soon be able to build top 10 lists, embed their own game videos, and use some extra search functions to help them sift through the game's catalog. Developers will also be able to contact curators directly through the platform, which should curb some of the attempted fraud that has popped up in the past. Finally, curators will get insights and analytics about how their links affect game sales, and there's a chance Valve may give kickbacks to the most active or influential users in the program. Sponsored curators have been a problem for the platform in the past, but as Kotaku points out, this last feature has the potential to backfire if curators start to skew, consciously or not, their recommendations toward more popular games, defeating the purpose of creation in the first place. The Explorers program, on the other hand, will open up for anyone to sign up and will come with its own set of forums for sharing favorite titles and setting up multiplayer matches. The combination of algorithmic discovery and Explorer approval is meant to help surface unknown titles. But as others have already pointed out, it could still be vulnerable to the same vote-hacking problems that plagued Greenlight. None of these features are set in stone yet, so it should be noted that Valve could tweak any of them at any point. Most promising, perhaps, Valve plans to start giving regular users more data about the games they're seeing and why they've been given a particular recommendation. It's not complete transparency, but will finally give users a better look inside Steam's notorious black box.
You know, there's only one solution to this, and Valve doesn't want to do it because it would cost them money. Valve, it's your fucking store. You fucking curate it. You hire some people to look at these games themselves, and they do it. No fans should have to – I don't care. The fans should not be – it's your store. Since when do the customers come in into your store and start stocking your store for you? That's not how it works. Pay the goddamn money. You're making money hand over fist for like 100 people to look at every single goddamn game that goes through your thing. It's called curation. It's called quality control. And that isn't something that other people should do for you. It is your job.
You know, Jonah, usually I deliberately try to disagree with you, but I have the exact same feeling anytime any retail company asks me to review their staff. It's not my job to evaluate your employees. It's your job.
You know, I mean, I don't mind customer reviews like you have in Amazon because, you know, it's just people voting, saying what they like about it. But that isn't dictating what Amazon puts in their store. It's their store. They get to decide what's in it. You know, this is how Jews being burned in gas camps get past their stupid thing because they don't see it until people point it out for them. You know, the that Holocaust game.
Which game is it that's been out of touch?
You know, or the game in which you got what's it called? In which you had to hunt out gays. You know, it's like it should never have gotten that far in which people got into the store and people could see it and start saying, "What is this? Why are you allowing this through?" Valve, you're making money hand over fist, and the same with Google, by the way. Fuck Content ID, hire 100 people, and if a company thinks that you're ripping off their stuff and it's not fair use, they can tell them, and then you hire these people to look at it, and they can see with their own eyes rather than a computer program, you know. It's just laziness.
But and it's, guys, if I do Valve's work for them, then they might give me a badge on my Steam profile.
Or they may give you a trading card, which is another scam that's going on with Valve as well. You know, Valve tries their best to, you know, they go by the laws of Luxembourg to get around laws in the United States and all that stuff. It's ridiculous. At some point, you know, here's the thing. I'm just glad that there are people out there who care enough to mock them mercilessly like Jim Sterling did for years and years and years about asset flip games. And Val says, oh, wait a minute, this is causing bad PR. You know? Here's the thing. It should never get that far. That's the entire point. It should never get to the customer's hands. You know? I mean, if I go into your store and there's a big pile of shit there, it's not my job to tell you, oh, by the way, there's a big pile of shit in your store and it should be cleaned up, and the person hands you a broom and a dustpan and say, okay, clean it up for me, please. It's ridiculous. Spend the money, Valve. Spend the money. You're making it hand over fist. Same as Google. Google makes $40 billion in profit every year. $40 billion with a B. Don't tell me you can't spend $100 million on something.
Capitalism doesn't work.
Whatever.
I'm even more jaded, if that's at all possible.
And you know what? And the thing is that, and the big companies aren't helping. They want to make it so that, you know, they're trying to crowd out the little guys from Steam. And the entire thing is that, you know, indie games are indie games for a reason, because you do have people, one or two man teams, who really are passionate about a project, you know. I mean, here's the thing. At least if Steam, if Valve continues to fuck up, there's always good old games and Green Man Games and Gamers Gate and all these other online sellers that people can go to. I know that Scott swears up and down for good old games because everything is completely DRM free. And I know you've had bad experience with good old games, Paul. But,
oh,
you know,
speaking of my bad experience with good old games, tangent, I finally have a Mac and I can play Grim Fandango.
Oh, good. Have you started it?
Isn't that the kind of game I want to play at all?
What?
I'm just learning this.
It's a 3D adventure game. It's not an action. It's an adventure game. You don't like the humor?
Yeah, but I mean, compared to Breath of the Wild, it's not doing its job at retaining my attention.
You know what? There are Let's Plays, even without commentary, of Grim Fandango you could watch.
I'm gonna watch a movie.
Oh, okay.
I say but this is another thing I say all the time. You're not just when you make a game, you're not just competing with other game. You're competing with every other thing vying for someone's time and attention. Hmm. Movies, books, video games, television—they're all fighting over the same chunk of time in one's day.
Okay, you know what? We've dominated this conversation. Scott and TJ, go ahead and attack Valve, and then we can move on.
I remember saying something earlier that Valve should hire people to curate their store, and glad to see you agree, because, I mean, yeah, like you said, they're making hand over fist, lots of profits, so they have more than enough money to hire some people just to go through and clean that store up.
And you know what? They did that thing in which they had people make lists of games, you know, and you know, people, but you know what? No one ghosted them. Because that's not how it works. I'm not going to go to Jim Sterling's thing to see which games he recommends. I'm just going to – there's either a game I want or there's going to be a front page showing me games that are available. That's it. That's what I'm going to do. Go ahead, TJ. What were you going to say?
I mean, it's not anything I haven't thought of before. I mean, it's basically Valve once again building a toilet paper bridge over a shit river.
I like that analogy.
It's a good one.
Yeah. Anyway, Paul, take the last one.
Oh, hold on. I have to go back to my notes now.
Dun, dun, dun.
Okay. Nintendo might accidentally have revealed that Pokemon is coming to the Switch, and this comes to us from Siliconera. I do tend to put too many syllables in words, don't I?
Yeah, you know, I should capitalize the E, because it's really Silicon Era.
Oh, okay, I get it now. Silicon Era.
Yeah. Either way, it's just fine.
Game Freak is recruiting for a new console development project, and they're in need of 3D CG designers with experience on Wii U and PS Vita-level character models using animation and modeling software Maya. In the staff recruitment ad, Game Freak is looking for someone that can consult with the programmers and work on assisting with data. It starts out with, quote, "Here's a chance to work for the development of a globally popular RPG. The work requires using material to create cartoon-like super deformed characters, monsters, and item models. In addition to work as a modeler, they'll also be expected to do work on debugging, data work, and more." Hunting for a unicorn much? Experience using animation and modeling software Maya is required. And if that doesn't say new Pokemon game to you, here's another bit that's the ad's details reveal. Quote, "We'll have you work on the production of an RPG game that is popular on a global scale. Platform will be console, and it's a title that just about anyone knows. A proposal that could be your future career." End quote. In another ad, they're looking for character modelers for a new title. This one has a similar job description to the 3D CG designer, except it specifically mentions under the Maya part that they should have experience working on modules at the level of Wii U and PS Vita. Both positions will be done in contact contract fashion and will last until May 2018 at the longest.
Oh, well, it's obvious it's East. You know, that must be the RPG, right? For those who don't know, it was
Maniac Mansion 2.
Ooh, well, actually, it is being worked on, by the way.
Maniac Mansion 2?
Yeah. So, at least that's coming. No. Maniac Mansion 2 belongs to Double Fine.
When did that happen? I thought it was made at LucasArts.
Yeah, by Double Fine. What's it called? All the, like, that's why Day of the Tentacle reboot came out, and it was able to have the original Maniac Mansion still inside it.
I don't even know what you're talking about anymore. You've lost
Day of the Tentacle by Double Fine. They did the reboot, and that's the sequel to Maniac Mansion. And in that game, in Day of the Tentacle, there's actually a mini game in which you can actually play the entirety of the original Maniac Mansion inside that game. And they did a reboot of it, and they had that inside it as well. Double Fine owns the license to Maniac Mansion.
Yeah, and they also just released, what was it? Didn't they just do a remaster of another one of their point-and-clicks?
Yeah, and they're working on Full Throttle.
Yeah, Full Throttle. That was the one I was going to say. I thought it was out already.
No. No. But they're doing all their old titles, which is nice. So, yeah, Pokemon. Now, I wonder if it's going to be true Pokemon or something like Pokemon Stadium. What was that one that everybody hated, Pokemon Hunter, in which you had to go into these caves? Oh, Pokemon Ranger. Pokemon Ranger, right. So,
Pokemon Rangers. Sorry.
I mean, it works with the Switch because the Switch is more of a... Here's the thing. A lot of people think of it more of a handheld console than they do as an actual console that you play on your TV. More
it
like
looks amazing on a TV, though, gotta say.
I mean, it's like, it's like if you had a cell phone and you could project the image on your cell phone on your TV. Sort of like that, you know, just happens to be able to play it on TV. So, but more people, I think, hey, Paul, do you think of the Switch more as a handheld console or as a traditional console?
I think of it as a traditional console in the way that the Wii U has shaped my opinion of what a traditional console should be.
That's fair.
I mean, you've known for years how much I've loved the smaller screen that the Wii U offered, because I only have the one TV in my house.
Yeah.
And, you know, being a child of ADD and, the 80s and my poor mother trying to ground me by moving both my television and Nintendo into her bedroom to lock the door when I was, you know, home alone after school. Do people even go home alone after school anymore? Anyway, my poor mother accidentally trained me to both watch TV and play video games at the same time. So I think my expectations that my home console no longer requires my TV is what has been shaped.
You know, I'm thinking, what if they do the Breath of the Wild treatment with this new Zelda, with a new Pokemon?
I don't know. That would be crazy, but...
Speak more about that. Unpack that for me.
Well, instead of, you know, Pokemon has always been, you know, a top-down basic RPG, right? And I'm wondering what if it does for Pokemon what they did with the original Legend of Zelda into Breath of the Wild, in which now you're free-roaming in a space, you know, and there's a lot less... what's the word I'm looking for? There's a lot more procedural generation, you know? I mean, walking through Oak City instead of having just these bunch of sprites.
I don't think you are using the correct word unless I really don't understand how procedural generation works, which...
I just mean... I mean, having things... happen instead of things being really, really scripted as they are in Pokemon, except for the wandering monster, of course, things happen a little bit more based on your actions more than, you know, you following a plot line.
Usually when I hear people talk about procedural generation, it's more that, like, the landscape doesn't exist until you try to walk there, at which point the game just starts pulling shit from random tables so that it never produces the same thing twice.
I think maybe I'm thinking more about like a dynamic plot line or something like that. I mean, we're getting into... Okay.
That's why I stopped you, because I wasn't sure what you were talking about.
Here's the thing. Pokemon's been the same game for 20 friggin' years. You know? why not, you know...
The classic.
But here's the thing. But it's that way because the Nintendo has the idea that a 10-year-old is going to... What's it called? New generation of 10-year-old is going to play Pokemon.
Are they wrong, though?
No, they're not wrong because they've enforced it that way.
I'll tell you what, though. Going off of that idea that you were just putting out there about a sort of Breath of Wild-style Pokemon, if they got rid of the tall grass in favor of doing what Breath of the Wild does with sort of the way you farm ingredients in that game, just putting certain things in certain areas – and they can only be found in that area, but they exist in the overworld, not like somewhere else, like where you have to go through and do fucking random encounters. That would actually take care of a lot of problems I have with that game.
You know, Pokemon is always...
Oh my god, they just got to take the Breath of the Wild engine and reskin it to make Pokemon.
Here's the thing, Pokemon has always been sort of a crafting game. You know, in this case, you're crafting Pokemon. But there's always been that element of you building something, you know, by taking two elements and combining them. Either they're berries or Pokemon, you know. And I think having a full crafting system with it, you know. I mean, here's the thing. Pokemon is a lot closer than Minecraft than people would like to admit. When you really get down to it, you know. So...
I'm not saying you're wrong, but unpack that for me a little.
I'm just saying that, you know, Pokemon has always had people mixing things together or raising Pokemon, you know, breeding different types of Pokemon together and all that stuff. Why not go the whole hog and make it a lot more crafting-centric, you know, and taking elements from the world and being able to do stuff with it, you know? Because the entire point of Pokemon, both the game and the animated series, is that you're a kid who sit out into the world to explore and do stuff, you know, without any parental supervision.
And you're saying focus on the adventure elements more. Well, we have that. It's called Zelda.
Right, well, yeah, but it's not – do you capture creatures and force them to cockfight like you can in Pokemon?
Well, that's what I was –
The weapons have essentially taken that role.
Yeah, they're not living creatures, and they're not living creatures. They don't grow, and they don't evolve, and they don't breed with other creatures. You know.
See, right, but that's what I was getting.
That's such a minor narrative change that the Breath of the Wild engine could easily take that on.
I know. I'm just saying. You know what? I just mean evolve Pokemon the game itself. Damn it, Scott. Yeah, you've been. Go ahead. No, first, Scott, you've been strangely silent.
I'm sorry. Do I keep dominating the conversation?
No, I just want to know what Scott thinks. Scott, you there? Hello?
Have we lost Scott?
I don't know. Maybe. Hold on. You know, I haven't been checking the...
Scott?
No, Scott should be there. Sometimes Scott mutes his thing so that the background stuff doesn't leak in. Anyways, so go ahead, TJ.
So yeah, that was what I was getting at, though, is that there's a lot of crafting elements in Zelda. There's certain things that you can find everywhere, like Hylian mushrooms and apples and things like that. But there's also certain things that you can't find that you can find in very specific places that don't exist anywhere else but those places, like say a certain flower that you can only find by a fairy fountain. And
you know, you always have to plant stuff to get new berries and all that stuff. Why not just make it your own homestead, you know, like your own little thing?
But what I'm getting at is that I would climb a mountain, an ice mountain, to catch an Articuno if it was at the top of that mountain.
I would
go to the desert and I would hunt around in the sand to find a sand shrew.
I'm going to tell you something. It would be a lot more interesting to go through an actual cave than it is in the friggin' 2D game with the Zubats. I cannot stand caves in Pokemon. Seriously.
Yeah. And I think just like putting all these things on the overworld and like making them sort of like the ingredients in Breath of the Wild would be a very novel approach to a new age Pokemon game that would get rid of a lot of problems with the old system.
You mean actually
go ahead and make Breath of the Pika right now?
You know what? You make it visually interesting? Because that's the problem with Pokemon. It has never really been visually interesting.
It would be interesting if all those Pokemon were actually running around in front of you, just waiting to be found wherever you go.
But now you're talking about Pokemon Photo, or whatever that game was in which you take pictures of Pokemon on a rail.
but no, I mean, he's absolutely right.
I know.
If you take all of those features and put it together with something that has a little bit of processing power, like, oh, I don't know, their new piece of hardware, it would be a fantastic game. It would bring people like me, who still have this concept of Pokemon being, you know, the original 150 first-gen monsters, back to the franchise, even though we're no longer 10 now, to put it politely.
Yeah.
Right.
Scott, you there now?
Scott!
I think he may be doing something with his... Oh, there you are.
I'm here.
So, Scott, what are your thoughts on a Breath of the Wild-style Pokemon?
That would be pretty cool.
Thank you!
And he said it in five words.
Ship it!
Five words, he nailed it. There you go.
I'll never know.
So, yeah. Anyway, look for our show notes at GamingPodcast.net, along with industry news and gaming history articles. If you enjoy feedback, so leave us comments on our blog at GamingPodcast.net. Also, set us up at Facebook.com/GamingPodcast. Subscribe to us on iTunes. Leave us some iTunes comments. I am Jonah Falcon at Jonah Falcon on Twitter.
You can find me at Johnny Chugs on Twitter.
I am at Alpha Shard at Alpha Shard.
And Paul S. Novak, currently still at Stager Monkey on Twitter. But who the hell uses that anymore? Find me on Facebook.
So, yeah. So this is 296. So hopefully we'll have you for the 300th episode in a month, Paul.
Oh, you might have to, like, continue to bother me weekly so that I remember to do that.
Just letting you know that there's a 300 coming up in the in.
Well, yes, and now that I know that there is a 300 coming up, you're going to have to keep reminding me because nothing stays on my radar longer than 10 hours.
Still,
I'm serious. Like, guys, you don't understand how many papers I have to turn around and the timeline that it has to be out the door by. Like, everything has to be off my desk 4 days from when it comes in. And when you're talking about, like, 400 and 500 papers to grade at a time, that's a full schedule.
What are you gonna do for your summer then?
Summer? My school doesn't have summer.
Oh, poor you, Jesus.
This is Florida. It's always summer.
You don't have a semester that you do nothing in?
No, that doesn't exist.
The school doesn't work that way. It's it runs on 12 month long semesters.
Okay, is it a trade school or is it just?
It qualifies as a trade school, but it still receives its accreditation from the same national board that does, like, law schools.
No, I get it. Yeah. Well, you know.
So to say it's a trade school is kind of like not real. Like it's. Makes the schedule a little bit more clear, but it doesn't make the level of expectation more clear.
Well, at least you have still time to play Dungeons and Dragons and Zelda, it looks like.
Oh god, D&D was canceled today. I was so happy I could go grade papers before the show, which is why.
Well,
Scott, you still play D&D, right? You still do tabletop?
I have no one to play D&D with.
Oh my god, Google Adventurers League. There has to be a place near you. I mean, they might all be horrible, but there has to be a place near you.
Yeah, that's the problem. Thank you.
Oh, wait a minute. Paul, do you still do the danger rooms?
You mean escape rooms?
Yeah.
Oh, yeah, that's the other thing that's taking up my time. Look me up at partlywicked.com.
You know, there's a new game.
I'm serious. Go ahead. Do that right now. Look me up at partlywicked.com.
Okay. Anyways, we will...
Company!
What? What did you say?
I started my own company.
Oh, cool.
Awesome.
DPartlyWicked.com.
Okay. So anyways, we will see you next week, except for Paul. Hopefully we'll see him in a month.
Happy gaming, everyone.
Take care, y'all.
Go to my website!
Wow, that's a departure from a usual catchphrase, Paul.
I know. New catchphrase, I'm getting t-shirts made. Go to my website, PartlyWicked.com.
Not exactly the most original thing, but we'll take it.
Hey, we have subliminal advertising, liminal advertising, and ultra-liminal advertising. Hey, you!
Super-liminal. We will see you next week. Bye, everybody.
Bye.
Wait, you talked over each other, see?
sorry. I'm used to there only being three people.
Oh, was that an insult to Paul? Was that an insult to TJ, or was it an insult to Scott? Mm.
No, it was an insult to how old I am, and I can't acquire new information.
You're a kid, Paul. You're still a baby. At least to me.
I'm a Toys R Us kid.
We will see you next week.
Happy gaming, everyone.
Take care twice.
Bye, Bonds. Still good.